This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
I wake up, I have no idea what time it is, maybe midnight, and I hear my mom whimpering. And I go out into the hallway and I see it's her boyfriend.
Welcome to the Off Duty Podcast, the podcast where we interview the men and women of law enforcement and help you to learn about the person behind the badge. If this is your first time tuning in, thank you. My name is Anthony McNeil, retired police officer and your host. Let's get started.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode number 62 of the Off Duty Podcast. Once again, it's me, your boy, Anthony McNeil, back with another fantastic guest joining me here on the podcast. This gentleman has 24 years in the law enforcement profession. He's a motivational speaker. He's the host of the Hero Academy podcast, which is also a part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network. From the state of New York, please help me welcome Mr. Dave Leith. Dave, what's going on?
What's going on, brother? It's very, very good to be here. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you were able to take some time out and get you on the podcast here. I know we've been talking about it for a minute, but we finally made it happen. So I'm happy to have you here. Everybody that listens to the podcast, you guys know how I start each episode off. And that's very simply, Dave, why law enforcement?
For one reason, it was only to support my young family because I was a young father, 19 years old with a son.
Yeah.
And by the time I turned 22, we were about to have the next one, and I was like, okay, I got to support this family somehow. And it was either become a pilot or it was become a cop. And cops seemed like the more secure. I knew that no matter what the economy was doing, no matter what was going on politically, I was never going to be laid off. And, you know, even through 2008, those checks kept coming.
Yeah, exactly. Any other family members in law enforcement?
None. I was the first. Everybody was like, you going to do what?
How old were you when you started?
I was 22 years old, NYPD, and I had a month left to graduate the academy, and then I got on to my current job.
Okay.
So I left there. I did a year straight of, I was a professional academy student.
What was that conversation like with the parents when you told them you were thinking about entering this profession?
My dad was never in the picture, but my mom was nervous, and she always thought I was going to become like a pastor, something in the church. But that wasn't my path. That's what she wanted for me.
Yeah,
and she was nervous. She was scared. I was just like, most officers never have to fire their gun. Statistically speaking, I'm a big statistics guy.
Yeah. Once you got into the profession, was it what you thought it would be?
Yes and no. I always imagined that like I would be like catching pedophiles and domestic abusers. and to some extent, I got to do both of those things. You know? Okay. I hear a lot of people say no, it's not what they thought it was me, but I went to college for criminal justice.
Okay.
Then I went to the NYPD Academy, and then I went on to my next academy. And so I was well prepared like for what the job was going to be. I talked to a lot of cops. I worked for my county as a clerk, just filing paperwork. So I was in that headspace and in that environment for a long time before I actually got on the job. So it was almost like being an explorer. Like you're pretty much prepped for what it's going to be, and then you get out on the road. And I was so young. I remember people saying, "Like, how old are you?" Because I still have a young face. And people go, how old are you? You know, are you old enough to drink?
Now, for everybody that's not in New York, does NYPD, do they have their own academy class outside of like the state's class? So if you attend an NYPD academy, that certification isn't good anyplace else in
the
state?
It's not good. It's not good anywhere else. I know in some states you can go to a local municipality and you'll be good to transfer. Like California, I know, has things like that.
Mm-hmm.
New York does not. Every department has its own academy.
Really?
And they're not connected whatsoever, which I think they should be, but they're not connected. They all want to train you in their own way, and they all want to say that you've been trained, you know, by our standards.
Wow. I mean, I figured that's what the FTO program would be for. Here in Michigan, we have something, it's called MCOS, and that's like the state certification that you have to go through as far as the academy in order, if you want to be a sworn officer in the state of Michigan. But once you go through that, then, you know, you can go to any department that you want to go to it, with the exception of the state police.
Without having to do their academy again?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Wow. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
I've met guys that have been through like three academies before, you know, and I thought two was crazy, and they're like, oh, I've been in three, you know. I've met people that have, you know, kept doing it because they kept getting a better job.
That's nuts, man. So no matter how much time you have on the job, if you transfer departments, you have to go through. It's a full academy. It's not like an abbreviated academy or anything.
Depending on how long you went through. Like I think it depends on how long ago it was. So they may give you a little bit of an abbreviated academy.
Okay. Wow. I never knew that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that the state would want some type of uniform training. Yeah. Yeah.
They do have some accreditation and some standards, but I don't know, you know, what the state standards are.
Now, what about like smaller departments?
The smaller departments, they send their people to the larger departments, academies.
Okay. Wow. So
like I live on Long Island, New York, and we have two counties, basically Nassau County and Suffolk County. And both of those counties, they accept the smaller villages who only have like, you know, one, two officers going through the academy. Mm-hmm. They accept those two officers into their larger academy class. So you might have a class in Nassau County PD of 50 Nassau County police officers, and then there'll be 10 village police officers, and then they'll have some sheriffs mixed in there too.
Okay.
So the majority will be police, but then you'll have some other smaller departments in there as well.
Wow, dude, I never knew that. Now, is there a FTO program or something that you have to go through after you get out of the academy?
Yes, there is. So everyone that graduate the academy, they actually ride with a field trained officer for, it depends on if you had prior time or not. So it's 6 to 12 weeks.
Wow. Man, yeah. Learn something new today. That's for sure. Now, I mentioned in your intro that you're the host of the Heroes Academy podcast. Can you explain what the podcast is all about?
So the podcast, I created it to give a place for, I call them heroes. I call them frontline heroes. So I wanted to hear the stories of the medical professionals, such as nurses, you know, police officers, firemen, and the paramedics, the EMS. And I love interviewing them. I love hearing their stories. I feel like we're all one big family. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily, they're all heroes to me, but I know that society calls them heroes. And some people don't like that label. The label's overused, but I do believe that a lot of people look up to them. And I know that a lot of people have pulled themselves out of a lower class situation into a middle class situation just by getting one of those types of jobs and change their whole trajectory. Like my girlfriend, for example, is a registered nurse. She's an RN, and she pulled herself out of poverty. She was a single mom, and she worked as a medical assistant, and she worked her way up to RN. And now she owns her own house and she's doing well. And I know that myself, being a young father, if I didn't get that job, I don't know what I would have been doing. I probably would have been a police officer somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at Florida. I was looking at California. I knew there were so many positions all across the country that I pretty much, once I set my focus on that, I knew that that was a good direction to go for me. Mm-hmm. 17 years of being a street cop, 17 years, I was out there being active, and they finally recognized my hard work and I got promoted to detective. So being a detective, I wanted to go to narcotics because narcotics is sexy, you know, being undercover. And they felt that I'd be better suited in special victims. So after the initial blow of, oh, I'm going there, I actually really enjoyed it and I found it fulfilling. But you can only do that type of work for so long, you know, working with sexually abused and physically abused children. Mm-hmm. That was close to 3 years. So that was 16 to the end of 18. Then I went to the general squad and now work on robberies and assaults and larcenies and burglaries, things like that.
Yeah. Now, if you weren't in law enforcement, what do you think you would be doing?
I would have tried to become a pilot for sure.
Okay. For sure. Why a pilot?
Because I love flying. Like, you know, when I ask people what superpower they want, most people say flying, because the ability to fly is the ability to just like get up and go where you want to go. Imagine if you could just strap a jetpack on your back and just like, you know, take off or just think it mentally, like, and just put your arm up and just, you know,
yeah.
It's just, I love flying. I've been fascinated with it since I was a kid. In high school, I completed my first year of my private pilot's license.
Okay.
And then I had a decision to make at the end of high school. Was it going to be for flying or was it going to be for law enforcement? I chose law enforcement because it seemed like the easier, more secure route. And I was right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did you continue on to get your license?
I did not. Like I said, I had a young family. We were a family of four at the time, and it was going to be a very expensive proposition.
Yeah. No interest in going back and trying it again?
No. Now I'm focused on business. Now I'm focused on business. You know, I'm focused on building my podcast, building up my platform. YouTube is next. And I also coach people as well. So that's my whole brand, the hero coach.
What kind of coaching?
Business coaching. So I teach people how to create their side hustles. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial people out there, a lot of people who are looking for a way to make some extra money. And I believe coaching is the way to go, because if you have the ability to do anything at all, you can always teach someone else how to do it. And anywhere in the world, if you have the ability to go on Zoom or something like this, Riverside, you can coach someone virtually, and it doesn't take a lot of your time. You know, you can do it in 15-minute chunks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, Dave, I want to go ahead and jump into the first segment of the podcast. For all of you that listen to the podcast on a regular basis, you know the first segment is what I call Dig Deeper. This is where I get nosy and I go poking around my guest's social media, and I pull out certain posts and I craft questions around those posts. And Dave, the first post of yours that I came across, it was, for lack of a better term, a meme, and it had the caption on it, "Live life in peace." And it says, "Peace is our gift to each other. Let's live life in peace and make the world better." You recall that post?
I do. And I'm a huge libertarian. Like, I believe in, you know, let other people live. And so I was never big on, I wanted to work in narcotics, but I was never big on drug prosecution, which is kind of funny. You know, I always thought that marijuana should have been legalized like much, much sooner than it was. But, you know, it was the basis of many of my car stops along the way. You know, I understand the laws. I understand the purpose of them. But I think marijuana is a lot less harmful than alcohol is, per se. How many times have officers been called to a drunk anywhere? You know, a drunk, drunks fighting, you know, drunk, abusive husband, you know, and how often is marijuana involved? You know, like people, right. People just want to smoke and chill. I walked into the gym 2 days ago and there was some guy just laid out on the bench. And, you know, like I said, I'm all about live and let live, but don't let it encroach on me too. You know, I'm all about habits, and like, I like to go to the same locker stall every single day. So I walk in, I see this guy laying across the bench, and I'm like, this son of a bitch, he's laying across this bench. I can't sit here. So I go and put my stuff in the locker, and I just kind of nudge his feet with my elbow. And he turns and he kind of moves over. And then, you know, I sent out a snap to my son, and my son is very empathetic. And he was like, well, you know, maybe the guy's homeless. And then I started thinking, you know, that's true. I don't know his story. So I don't know, you know, maybe someone in his family has cancer, and he can't sleep at home, you know, for whatever reason. So he's just catching 15-minute nap in the gym. Man, yeah. I just thought it was odd. But then, you know, my thoughts went back around to, no, maybe he's just an inconsiderate ass.
Well, my first question around that post is, what brings you peace?
What brings me peace is helping people. So that's why I became a police officer. That's why I became a coach. And that's why I started the podcast, so that I could help people to tell their stories and you know, hear their stories. The things that bring me peace the most is spending time with my family and being fit, going to the gym. Like that's my therapy. Okay. You know, if I have a tough day, I need to go to the gym. If I have a good day, I need to go to the gym.
Yeah. I hear you. I just started back working out, my wife and I, because, you know, as I get now 55, it's a long way from where I used to be when I was working. You know, I retired now. It's been 8 years since I've retired. And man, I think I was 190 when I was working. Now I'm up to 220, you know, so.
Yeah, it creeps up on you. And then one day you look in the mirror. And that happened to me this past January. I looked in the mirror and I was up about 19 pounds. And I was grabbing on the lower part of my belly and I was like, man, I've never had this before. And I'm like, what is this? So I actually hired a nutritionist, a coach, a fitness coach. And I worked with them for 6 months and I was able to come down 19 pounds. And really what it came down to was tracking everything that I was putting in my mouth, you know, the track, because the gym habits didn't change much. I was always going 5 to 6 days a week. And what I increased was my walking too. I'm very, very sedentary. Like I enjoy sitting on the couch. I really do.
I've
tried to figure out, I'm like, how can I build my business from my cell phone while sitting on my couch?
The great American dream right there, boy. Yeah. I want to ask you about another post here. And this was another picture of a quote, and it read, "A hero is somebody who is selfless, who is generous in spirit, who just tries to give back as much as possible and help people." And my question to you, Dave, is who is your hero?
Some of my heroes, they're all in the personal development world. Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, you know, Barack Obama. Not to get political, but he did it, you know?
Yeah.
He did it. And I don't vote Democrat, just for all your listeners. I'm a registered Republican. But I do have a circle of people in my mastermind, and I have them in my fold. And each person, I wish I had time, but I don't want this to go too long. But each person, they represent something to me. So like in my 12 mastermind figures, I have Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's a hero to me. You know, I've loved Bruce Lee since I was little, you know. Oprah Winfrey, Elon Musk, all of these entrepreneurial figures. And I have a lot of people that they speak to me, you know, from beyond or they're friends in my head, you know.
Growing up, who was your hero?
Growing up, it was definitely my mom, because my dad was out of the picture. So my mom, she went from welfare sometimes and then getting in trouble with the law because she was working a second job while collecting welfare. So it wasn't like she was just trying to collect the money. She was out there trying to hustle. So I got that hustler spirit from my mom, you know, watching her do different network marketing companies, Herbalife, you know, and seeing all the vitamins on the table. And, you know, she was always working. So I was a latchkey kid. I had to be responsible for myself at a very young age. It was me and my younger brother. And I remember coming home in middle school and letting us both into the house. You know, nowadays people are like, how young is too young to let kids, you know, watch themselves?
If they can take care of themselves, let them.
Yeah. I had so much freedom as a kid that I really believe that it comes down to personal choices, because I grew up on the edge of the hood and it's also your environment. So I didn't have a lot of bad kids around me. I had one neighbor who was a sports superstar. He was a state wrestling champion and he had trophies and he was into football and baseball. He did every sport. So that was my best friend. And growing up on the edge of the hood, I only had that one neighbor, that one house. So I didn't really venture into the hood much. and I didn't find myself getting into trouble. So once I was of age, like, you know, 14, 15 years old, and I had the opportunity to get into trouble, I realized that, just to be blunt, in the 90s, I had some friends that were selling drugs. And I realized very early on, I was like, that is not the life for me. And yeah. I was just like, you know, watching them, you know, get locked up on different charges and on the weekends and ducking in the bushes. I realized early on, I'm like, I am not a thug, you know, I'm not about that life.
It's funny you say that, because you just reminded me, when I was growing up, you know, I had a group of dudes that I hung around who were, you know, they took that wrong path. And when I became a cop, actually, I just got hired as a cadet at the time. And as part of our orientation, we got a chance to go up to the county jail and walk through the jail. And as I'm walking through, I hear someone starts yelling, "Tony, Tony." And I'm like, "Who the hell is that?" So I turn around and look, and it's one of the dudes that I went to school with that used to run in this circle of guys that all end up getting into dope and all this other stuff. And he was locked up in the county. Another guy, once I actually got on the job and started working, we had a call one night of a drive-by shooting. Guy got shot up at a light. I get there, and it turns out the guy was one of the cats that I used to run with. You know, he had became a big-time drug dealer, and somebody had a hit out on him, and he pulled up to the light, and they pulled up next to him and lit him up. It was just funny, because it was probably about five or six of those guys, and all of them, with the exception of one, are either still alive, or, well, he's the only one that's still alive, but the others are either dead or in jail. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah. Another guy that I was mentioning, I actually ran into him while I was working. He's now an attorney, which was funny, because, you know, we got to talk, and I was working the front desk one day, and he came in because he had some clients that had gotten locked up. And right away we recognized each other, and we started talking and everything. And he was like, "Man, yeah, I had to take the other route because I could see where those dudes were headed." And I was like, "Yeah, man, we were all young, you know, I'm talking 12, 13 years old, you know, and like you say, very impressionable. And these cats, you can just see where their lives was headed. And unfortunately, you know, for all of them, they were another statistic, you know? So, but when you said it reminded me of that.
I know that for me personally, and for you also, you know, we beat a lot of statistics, you know, we beat them.
Yeah.
Growing up where you grow up, your environment plays such a huge role. You're behind the eight ball sometimes, you know?
I think I shared this before on the podcast, but, you know, it wasn't just that. It was like my old man, you know, my old man was the best dad in the world until he got a drink in his hand. And, you know, then we had to deal with that and the whole domestic violence, you know, with him and my mom. You know, so it was, you're right, it was a lot to overcome, but I always knew what I wanted. And, you know, all of that stuff just made me know what I didn't want out of life. And it just pushed me in the opposite direction to strive and try to be the best person that I could be, you know. And that's what I instilled in my kids, you know, and I'm thankful for them. You know, they've followed suit, you know, so no complaints here, man. But
I'll tell you two quick stories. I know I'm taking over your typical normal interview style, but there's two quick stories that I got to share with you. One, I'm about 9 years old and I wake up. I have no idea what time it is, maybe midnight. And I hear my mom whimpering and I go out into the hallway and I see it's her boyfriend. He's holding her wrist in his hands. So she's facing me and she kind of like, you know, shakes the head like, don't get involved. Like, don't, you know, don't come out here. So I go back into my bedroom. I crawl out. It's a one story ranch, small house. I crawl out the bedroom window. I run to my neighbor's house, call 911. And that was like one of my first interactions with the police. They ended up locking him up. And I guess she got an order of protection. We stayed at the neighbor's house for a couple days. And for years after that, I dreamed of running through the woods to my neighbor's house because there was an empty lot. And we used to tell stories about what lived in those woods. So for dreams, and anytime anything was happening in a dream, running to my neighbor's house, that was like my home base. That was like the safe spot. One other quick story, my second interaction with the police. I'm 21 years old now. about to go into the academy. So I've been working for the county for a couple of years now, and I get a phone call. I'm living with my soon-to-be wife at that time because, you know, we have a child. So he's two at that point. And I get a phone call at night, 10 o'clock at night. Your brother's in the hospital. He's 17 years old. He's been stabbed at a party.
Wow.
So I rush up to the hospital. He's only conscious for that first day. He's apologizing. He got into a fight over a girl. And the guy at the, it was like a birthday party at a firehouse. The guy pulls out a knife and stabs him in the stomach and his intestines fall out. His friends drive him to the hospital and he died. My brother dies of an infection 2 weeks later after being stabbed. So the homicide detectives get involved. You know, they start prepping my mom for, you know, what's to come. Everybody knew who it was. There was a lot of witnesses there. So, you know, they explained the difference between murder and manslaughter because it wasn't, you know, pre-planned. Mm-hmm. So the guy ended up going to prison for 6 years. And my mom was never the same after that. Like, she was in depression for a long time. And then I believe that it caused early onset dementia. Also, her diet didn't help as well. But I believe that the death of my brother, her never getting over that, caused early onset dementia. That's why I'm so like tight on my health, you know, and eating right, because I know that that's like the key to not getting dementia, hopefully. You know, I play a lot of chess. I play a lot of poker. I can talk about that incident now because it's no longer a open wound. It's more of a scar now. But that was the most traumatic thing to ever happen to me in my life was that. And I got through it. So now I can tell people, like, if you're still standing, then you got through your most traumatic moments and you can tell other people your story, you know, you can share that.
Yeah, for sure. That's, use it as a testimony. That's for sure. Yeah, man. Sorry to hear about your brother.
Yeah, it was 24 years ago, you know, so.
Wow.
It's a long time ago, but I still think about him all the time.
I'm sure. Well, listen, man, I want to go ahead and get into my next segment. And this is what I call Random 7. These are just 7 totally random questions that are electronically generated. I don't know what they are until they pop up. So try to answer them the best you can. All right.
All right. I got you.
The first one. If someone offered you $10,000 every time they punched you in the face, how many times would you let them hit you?
Oh, until I passed out. I like my face, but I also like money. So, until I passed out, it depends. Are we talking about lightweight? Or are we talking about heavyweight? There's a lot of questions. I got questions.
That would be hard. I may be one and done. I don't know if I can go past that.
I remember when I was in the City Academy, one of the instructors said, hey, when you're out there on the street, expect to get punched in the face. And I was like, I am not getting punched in the face. And, right. You know, I'm pretty good at ducking and bobbing and weaving. I'm like, I'm ready. You know, I'm not getting punched in the face. And I never got punched in the face.
Yeah, I never got punched in the face, but I got slapped upside the head by a mental lady. She was a long story, but you know, we get a call one night of a lady yelling out the window. My partner and I get there and she's on the phone and she wasn't really yelling. She was just talking loud on the phone. So she invites us in. She has this beautiful condo, degrees on the wall. She was a professor at one point. And we're just having a conversation, just trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, she starts reciting poetry that she had written because, you know, we had seen some awards that she had won for writing all this poetry.
So you don't know that she has altered mental status?
No. She seemed totally normal until my partner mentioned something about her daughter. And that just flipped the switch. And she started knocking stuff over and talking about killing people and all of this stuff. And he's like, okay, you got to go to the hospital. So we transport her to the hospital. She's in the back seat. And my partner, I go inside to, you know, to let the medical staff know, hey, you probably gonna have to strap her down because she's just losing it out here. But actually, right before we pulled up to the hospital, we didn't have the screen up in the car, and she wasn't cuffed or anything. And she reached through the window, and she slaps me upside the head. I'm like, oh man, I was not expecting this, you know. But they finally end up. And oh, the funny part was, I go in to talk to the medical staff. I come out and my partner is standing outside the car. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, man, she in there taking her damn clothes off.
Everyone knows if you get that call of a naked individual, you're like, here we go, you know?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Next question. Would you rather your significant other be too flirty or be one who constantly complains?
Oh, I'd definitely rather her be too flirty. I can't take the negative energy. And as long as I got access to a phone, you know, I can kind of monitor her stuff, you know?
Yeah, I agree on that one, man. Next question. What makes you feel like a kid again?
Anytime I take a walk and anytime I go to a park and if I work out outdoors at a park, just being around children, I absolutely love children. I love their energy. I love their little yells and their giggles, you know, and
yeah,
like I try to bring my girlfriend's kids to the park so I'm not just there by myself.
It's funny you say that, because as I was looking through your social media, I did come across a couple of posts where you were at the park working out.
Yeah, man, I work out at the park quite often.
Okay, yeah, and I remember something in one of the captions along those lines about getting in the park and working out. That makes sense now. Next question. Do you have a scar? If so, how did you get it? I told you these are just random ass questions. So
I love them. I really like the randomness. So I do have a scar on my pec, and it looks like a bullet wound. So when I met my girl, I told her it was a bullet wound, and I was like, no, I'm just kidding. It was actually a cyst that I had removed. I thought I was smart, and I thought I could take the stitches out myself. So pulling out the stitches, I actually made it worse. And the doctor looked at it. He's like, what did you do? So I do have a scar like right on my chest. And it was like the perfect size, like probably the size of a dime. It looked like I got hit by a bullet for a while. And my girl was like, oh my God, you know, rubbing my chest. Like, oh my God, tell me that story. It's not really a great story. It was just a cyst from an ingrown hair that started to grow.
Yeah. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, you're probably wondering, why the hell is he asking all these random things? And I do that because they bring out stories that people don't normally share. If you go to any podcast and listen, if you have someone that's been on multiple podcasts before, you typically hear the same stories over and over again.
Same questions too.
The same questions. Yeah. So when you come to my podcast, you're going to get something that's lighthearted and a little different. And there is a method behind this, because these questions do allow you to learn things about people that you would not ordinarily learn. Like, for instance, the scar question. I have a scar. My scar goes basically down the length of my stomach. And the backstory to that is I damn near died twice. You know, I have a blood clotting disorder. And when my wife and I first got married in 92, we were on our honeymoon, and we come home, and we were home for about a week straight. My stomach was just killing me, and I didn't know what it was. And finally, about a week after returning from our honeymoon, I told my wife, I can't take it anymore. I have to go to the hospital. And I go in, and they tell me, hey, you got gas? Go home, drink some prune juice. You'll be fine. Well, 3 days later, they were rushing me to the hospital, and they gave me a 10% chance of making it through the night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, when I went into the hospital, that looked like I was 9 months pregnant, and they ended up doing exploratory surgery, and they found out that gangrene had set into 3 feet of my intestines. So the prune juice definitely didn't help, because it just caused everything to back up, and having a blocked intestines is not good when you're drinking prune juice. So that's where my scar came from. But, you know, those are the kind of things that you pull out of people when you ask these random questions. That's the whole reason, if you're wondering why I ask these questions. I got three more I want to ask you.
Shoot.
If you were going to talk to a group of graduating teenagers, what would the topic be?
Oh, the topic would be, you're never too young to be a mentor to someone else. You find greatness through service. So if you find a way to serve more people, you'll find a way to bring out your own inner powers and bring out your best stories. That would be my message to them. You're never too young. Don't think that because you're graduating that you're too young to be a mentor, that you don't have life experiences that would serve someone else. You know, even if mm-hmm. they're just a year younger than you, you're still ahead in the game where they want to be.
Good advice. Next question, Dave. If you could know the secret behind any one secret or mystery, what would it be?
It would be unlocking the powers of the mind. It would definitely be, you know, I'd like to see what we're capable of.
Okay.
Are we capable of telekinesis? Are we capable of, you know, setting things on fire with our mind? Like, I'd like to know. Are we capable of reading minds, you know, like, and just like, I believe in thoughts in the ether, you know, and I believe that we are, you know, radio transmitting and also receiving devices. So like all of those great ideas, I think someone's put them out there and sometimes we receive them and we don't realize that it's coming from that, you know, it's coming from the ether. Mm-hmm. You know, like Nikola Tesla got all of these amazing ideas. And I think he was just more connected to the ether. You know, some people are very connected.
It's funny, you know, you talk about mind reading. I've been married now for 28 years, and I swear my wife can read my mind because I cannot tell you how many times I've thought something and 2 minutes later she said it. So.
How often are you thinking of a song and someone else starts whistling it or singing it? That happens way too often for it to be coincidence, you know?
Interesting topic for sure. Last question here. Have you ever saved anyone's life or has anyone ever saved your life?
A woman told me that I saved her life just from doing a U-turn. I was underneath an overpass. I activated my lights to do a U-turn underneath the overpass. Mm-hmm. And while I was turning, a car came barreling through the red light. And I had to double check it because she almost hit me too. Wow. And I had to double check. I'm like, is that a red light? She had barreled through a red light.
Yeah.
And didn't even like barely stepped on the brake. And the woman came over. She was crying, shaking, and said, oh my God, because you'd made that U-turn, you know, I paused and just to see what you were doing. You know, this was when I was in uniform and in a marked car. She said, I paused and stopped. She's like, if I would have went through that intersection, she's like, my family would have been killed. And she was just thanking me so much. And it turned out that the person that went through the red light was another cop's wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was a sticky situation, but you know, I worked it out with everybody. You know, I smoothed it out with everyone, but yeah, it was a sticky situation. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. I've been down that road, unfortunately.
Yep.
All right, Dave, I want to go ahead and get to my last segment.
All right, let's do it.
This is what I call this or that. I'm going to give you two topics. You simply have to pick one. Don't have to explain why. Don't give it too much thought. All right, ready?
All right, let's go.
The first one, winning the lotto or finding your soulmate?
Winning the lotto.
Ketchup or ranch?
Ketchup.
Funny story or one-liner?
Funny story.
Boxers or briefs?
Briefs.
Loud neighbors or nosy neighbors?
Nosy neighbors. I want to explain that one because I feel like nosy neighbors will call the cops when they see something that doesn't look right, you know?
Yeah, I have one of those. So, passenger or driver?
Driver.
Be embarrassed or be afraid?
Embarrassed.
Attend a party or host a party?
Attend a party.
Reality shows or documentaries?
Documentaries.
And the last one, sneakers or dress shoes?
Dress shoes.
Awesome. Dave, listen, man, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on the podcast and kick it with me. Before we get out of here, can you do me a favor? Can you just go ahead and share your social media where everybody can reach out and see what you have going on?
Yeah, so I'm most active on Instagram, Dave Leath 1. So it's DaveLeath, the number one. Underneath the name, it says David Diem, as in like Carpe Diem. And The podcast is called the Hero Academy Podcast. It's on Apple and Spotify. And if you want to connect with me, just go to davidleith.com.
I will put links to all of that down in the show notes. So you guys be sure to go over and check out Dave and see what he has going on. Any last words before we get out of here?
No, I just want to say if anybody wants a free 15-minute, 30-minute session with me to go over their story and they, you know, they're thinking about getting into business, I definitely tell them to reach out to me. And, it doesn't take much. All you need is a story. You need an offer. And then you need the ability to get that offer in front of people. If you have that, you have the makings of a business, you know, a business around you. In this day and age, it's so easy to build a platform around yourself. It's just so easy, you know, and then we could work on your brand, your branding. That's not the hard part. The hard part's your story and the offer that you're going to offer people. So I just like to tell you listeners, if they want to connect with me, definitely go to davidleith.com. It is free. I love connecting with people. I love hearing their stories and I'd love to work on your story with you. Thank you for having me on, man. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, for sure, man. Likewise, I wish we could have done it sooner, but definitely have to get you back here in the near future. Guys, listen, you know the story. Go over and follow us on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on. As of the time of this recording, the podcast is right now number 76 on Apple's podcast in the social and culture category. I'm shooting for number one. And I need your help to get there. So please leave reviews, follow us on Apple Podcasts, follow us on whatever platform you're listening to. If you go to theoffdutypodcast.com/reviews, you can follow the podcast there. You can also leave reviews. I appreciate you guys. I'm thinking about doing some other stuff with the podcast as far as some exclusive content. So if you're interested, follow me on Instagram for details, and I will be happy to share that with you. On that note, I'm out of here. You guys stay safe, and I will see you all on the next episode. Bye-bye.